It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Money. Everybody wants it. Everybody needs it. Yet, we struggle to understand how to manage it and how to talk about it, especially those of us who have never had much money to speak of. At this point in our continuing series during Financial Literacy Month, we want to take a look at money management from the perspective of generational poverty. What circumstances and financial habits perpetuate poverty, and how can families prevail? Tammy Thompson is a community liaison and certified housing counselor for NeighborWorks Western Pennsylvania. She works with adults, kids, and families on financial planning at all socioeconomic levels, and she joins us in Studio A. Tammy Thompson, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
And if you have a comment or question for our guest, you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is essspgh@wesa.fm. And you can reach us on Twitter at essspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Tammy Thompson, let's begin by looking at the disparities that make it hard for people in impoverished communities to get ahead.
Well, you know, this is a very difficult conversation for folks to have, especially in the African-American community. And I am obviously an African-American woman. We have difficulty discussing our finances, especially if they are not up to par. So we spend a lot of time trying to pretend sometimes that we're doing a little better than we would like to be. And the disparities start, first of all, with, you know, a lack of education in some instances. We did not get the benefit of the dinner time conversation surrounding money and financing and saving and credit. So unfortunately, a lot of us, and this is not exclusive to African-American communities, but I obviously have to speak about it from a perspective that I know. You know, you struggle by not being able to discuss it openly. And unfortunately, that starts at home. If our parents do not want, you know, to discuss the fact that the Duquesne light bill is due and the rent is due, and we want to shield our children sometimes from the stress of that, you know, that conversation might not happen. And so sometimes the disparity starts at home. The wealth disparity gets bigger if you start looking at the statistics that show that there are far less African-American homeowners in our country. That is a definite asset that will develop wealth building, savings, and reduce debt. These are all things that increase wealth. And if you don't understand credit and you don't understand the importance of homeownership and you don't understand the importance of having a strong savings plan in place, then there will be disparities.
Well, why do you suppose people have these avoidance issues? Why is it so hard to talk about?
Well, for one, you know, a lot of people are embarrassed. I mean, that's just a basic emotion. If you're surrounded by folks that you perceive to be doing better than you, you don't necessarily want to talk about your financial shortcomings. And unfortunately, you create a bigger issue by trying to mask the fact that you have less. So what do? You spend more. You spend more on the material things and the labels and the $100 and $200 tennis shoes because you want people to believe that you're doing better than you really are. And all that does is create a much bigger issue, much bigger issues that unfortunately our children are watching. And then they begin to develop these same habits.
So how can parents initiate a conversation with their children about making smart financial decisions, especially if they, you know, if the parents can't make it on their own, if they're not making smart financial decisions, then how can they help their children?
Well, that's one of the things at NeighborWorks that we are very strong about. We believe it's extremely important that we are reaching out and educating folks and opening that door for those conversations with the adult and with the children. Sometimes we have to start with the children and hope that they go home and start the conversation. But the education is there's nothing more important than that. Let's talk about some of the mistakes. And let's really talk about why do you feel the way you feel about money. For someone who's never had to struggle financially, it's very difficult for some folks to understand, you know, and they say, well, why don't they just do it? And it's not that simple. The poverty and the generation and generation of poverty causes mental scarring that people just don't understand unless you've been through it. So it's just not that easy to sit down and have the conversation. And that's why we are there, to help guide people into those conversations and make them feel more comfortable having them.
And how do you start the conversation? How do you overcome the fear that you have of the avoidance issues and just the idea that someday this will all work itself out, so why talk about it now if we don't have to?
Well, I think what makes me – I have to say I'm going to sound a little confident here, maybe a little unhumble, but I am a very good counselor. I'm very good at what I do because I have lived a story that I'm able to share with my clients and with my groups. And, you know, I let them know that they are not alone. This is not an issue that, I'm foreign to. I get it. I've been there.
Let me hear your story.
Well, I'm going to briefly tell it. It's a long, detailed story. But my family and I grew up in some of the most extreme poverty, the type of poverty that some people will never, ever understand. We grew up in Bluefield, West Virginia, a little mining town in southern of West Virginia, almost the tip of Virginia, where everybody was poor. Everybody worked in the coal mines. And, you know, when you're a child, and we had a great childhood, I didn't know we were poor. I certainly didn't realize how tough it was for my parents. But as the coal mines started to close in the mid-70s, you know, we realized that, you know, maybe, you know, things are a little bit tougher than we thought they were. And my parents made plans to move here to Pittsburgh because my dad had heard that the steel mills were hiring. And we drove here and we packed everything that we owned, including our dog, in a car, and we drove to Pittsburgh. Our car actually broke down I'm going to be telling my age in a little bit, but if you guys remember the public safety building, used to be on the Boulevard of the Allies, mm-hmm. Our car broke down directly in front of the police station, and we lived in this car for almost a month while my mom and dad tried to find work, because once we got here, my dad realized there was no job. The job that he thought he was coming for was not here. And without having a savings or a backup plan, we were left here trying to find housing and find work. And eventually my brother and I ended up in a foster home until my parents could find housing and work. And luckily, through the great work that the Salvation Army does, they helped my mom and dad find housing and they got jobs. But, you know, coming from a very small town in West Virginia, moving to Arlington Heights, which is where we ended up moving, if you know anything about, you know, Arlington Heights, it was a huge culture shock for us. It was actually the beginning. These things were the beginning of the mental scarring that I developed from our poverty. That was when I really realized we were poor. No money equals separation from your parents. If they're unable to care for you financially, you will be taken away. And these are the things that became ingrained in my mind as a very young child, and it did affect me immensely. And it started to impact the way I thought about money. And this is one of the things that I tell my students and my groups, is we all have a place in our very young past that we begin to develop feelings about money. And it can either be good feelings or it can be bad feelings. And unless there are things that are done to reverse those feelings, you will begin to develop habits based around those emotions and those feelings. So once my parents were able to get us out of foster care and, you know, they found us housing and we went to school. And if you know anything about middle school children, they can be very cruel. They are some of the cruelest little people on the planet. And that was when I really found out that we were poor, because my parents were not into displaying materialistic labels and tennis shoes and all the things that some of my peers obviously had. And as a result, we were bullied brutally. It was almost torture to go to school. Again, my feelings about money are starting to be developed based on the fact that people don't like me, and my self-esteem is ruined because of the lack of cash. So,
and obviously this has left, as you say, a scar on you and affected how you are making decisions about managing money and advising others.
Yes.
Obviously, you've become quite good at it. But does the desire to appease others or to put on airs and own the Nike shoes instead of some other brand that's not the cool brand or the right jeans or whatever they happen to be, is that what sometimes leads people down the path of making bad decisions because they're afraid of what others might think?
Absolutely. But if you really think about that a little deeper, it's not about the pressure that outsiders put on us. It's about the pressures that we put on ourselves. And in a lot of cases, depending on what you've been through and what feelings you've developed about money, your self-esteem and self-worth can be non-existent, and you need things to make yourself feel like you're worthy. And, you know, if that's the case, there will never be enough to satisfy that need. And you really need to dig deep and find out what is missing, what has happened through my years and years and generation of poverty that is making me feel like I'm nothing if I don't have these things.
It's Essential Pittsburgh, and my guest is Tammy Thompson. She's a community liaison and certified housing counselor for NeighborWorks Western Pennsylvania. You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Share the dramatic or traumatic story in your life that has affected how you approach your finances. And certainly this is a woman who can give you some advice. Before we get into some of the particulars of financial management, do your clients have similar experiences to yours when it comes to money?
I think they do. I think a lot of people are less open about those experiences until they get to know me a little bit better. My job is usually to try to get people to open up before we start talking about their credit and their finances. I really want them to feel comfortable enough to trust me and to know that they're able to discuss those things with me so that we can move forward and talk about the real thing, the credit and the savings and the financial situation.
How much, though, too, is this unrelated to avoidance issues or fear or poor planning and just the nature of things in America in the 21st century? As we see a greater disparity, and certainly there are statistics to track this, that there is a growing disparity between haves and have-nots in the United States. So are we seeing more situations where perhaps, as was the case with your parents, they were in the middle of circumstances they couldn't necessarily control? Is there a way to get control over a situation that seems to be out of control?
Well, obviously, I think there is a way to gain control, but you really need to identify what is the issue. If the issue is just that you don't have enough money, then it's a lot bigger than, you know, let's talk about better budgeting and better saving. Obviously, you know, for some people, it's that they're unable to find a job, or there are issues that are preventing them from finding a job that pays well enough for them to support their family. On the other hand, there are people who earn enough money and just haven't developed the skills necessary to learn how to manage it. And, you know, you have to figure out what is the issue. Do they really not have enough money, or do they just have poor budgeting skills that are preventing them from getting ahead?
What we're finding with a lot of people, too, is that those that don't have enough money are moving in together. And we're in the United States, we've seen a rise in the number of multi-generational households. When one generation has to care for two generations, what kind of financial impact can this have on a family?
Well, I can tell you, this is how my story is universal. I am actually raising one of my grandchildren right now. I adopted one of my 5-year-old granddaughters, and it was a huge blow to my budget, you know, when I decided to do that. I wasn't planning to start raising children again, and all the things that come with raising a 5-year-old, you know, were not in my budget. So I had to revamp the budget and come up with creative ways to make sure that she had everything that she needed and that it was a less strain on the budget. But for a lot of families that I know who are raising grandchildren, and sometimes their children are moving back in, and maybe the children aren't working and you ended up having to support them and their children, you know, that is it can be a detrimental situation to a budget, especially if you're working on a fixed income. And what I have to say about that is that it's, you know, at some point you have to sit everybody down and let them know that you can't carry the load. Everybody has to work together, including the children. This is why we do youth financial literacy. We have to teach the children what sacrifice means. We used to know what sacrifice meant. And a lot of our youth at this point, they don't know what sacrifice means. So, you know, if they have a choice between you paying the electric bill and them getting those new sneakers, they want the sneakers. And we have to get the entire family to work together and understand that this is a group activity that needs to happen, and they need to learn from it.
And it sounds like that may, in fact, be the way out of poverty for a multi-generational household.
Exactly.
412-246-2002. Let's go to the phones. We have Teresa. Downtown is her location. Teresa, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi. I really, when I just turned on by accident, I'm so appreciative of you bringing this woman, this wonderful woman, to talk to us about these real realities in our life. We don't hear that much. I use the radio a lot, and I just want to really thank you, even though I could not distill a particular. I had poverty in my childhood, but I just don't have one point. But I hope that you folks will repeat her name and phone number, and if it's a resource for people, myself or others, to call and get counseling.
Well, Teresa, hang on for a second, and certainly you can get a hold of Tammy Thompson, who is our guest. We'll have a link to information about her on our website at WESA.FM.
Well, I'll let you give it to the public. Do you want me to hang up and let you give all that to the public?
I can, but before we let you go, you said you have overcome poverty in your life?
I don't know if I overcame it, really, but my parents did have poverty. I was born in 1932 in the Depression in the south end of Boston.
What values did they pass on to you in terms of managing money and planning for the future financially?
Well, I'll mention two points that come to my mind. Whether they're helpful, I don't know, but I know that although we did not have a car, we hardly had rent. We never went out to buy new clothes or anything like that. But every single day, my brother and sister and I sat down with our mother while our father was in the barbershop to the most wonderful, delicious, and I realize now very, very healthy food. And I remember reading in Look magazine at that time. There was Life magazine and Look. My brother and I, we read about children in our area who were hungry. And I'm crying right now because we were so sad to think they did not have good food. I don't know if that's helpful to the people, but we had good food every day. The other thing is my father saved money very hard, but I cannot save money even though I have more than he had. I mean, I'm on Social Security now, but that's all. He tried to get us to save money.
Well, that, you know, I would ask Tammy, is that something that we, for whatever reason, have lost the ability to do compared with past generations?
Absolutely. And Teresa, thank you so much for calling. I'm glad you called, and I'm glad you were touched by any of the conversation that you heard. But I found it very interesting, first of all, that you mentioned the meals that you had, because I actually developed a program for our organization called Savvy Savers that focuses specifically on helping families reduce their monthly grocery bill. And that is extremely important because it's very difficult for folks on a fixed income to buy healthy food. It's extremely expensive, and sometimes the families do not get to benefit from the types of meals that we did. And as a family, regardless of how poor we were, that was the one thing that I could say is that my father did a very good job of, you know, managing the budget wisely to make sure that we always had enough to eat and we always had a healthy meal on the table. So thank you for that. Saving, again, is a habitual thing. Just like you're not born learning how to tie your shoes, people are not born knowing how to be successful savers. And all I can say about it is practice, 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 practice. Practice makes perfect. A lot of people start a budget and they start saving and then they fall off and they fail 1 month and then they just give up. It's okay. You know, you're going to fall off the wagon. You're going to mess up. You're going to destroy the budget. You're going to miss your savings goal, and it's okay. You just get up and you do it again and again and again until it becomes habitual for you. That's the advice that I would give listeners.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. Our guest is Tammy Thompson, community liaison and certified housing counselor for NeighborWorks Western Pennsylvania. A couple quick points I'd like to hit with you before we wrap this up. One is, do you think it's useful to accept government support?
Well, I think it's useful in what its original intent was. I remember, you know, I've heard stories from a lot of seniors when they talked about what government assistance used to be. And I believe that it's partially government's fault that the system has been abused and misused the way it has been. There are a lot of families who genuinely need assistance to help get them on their feet and move them towards their goals. And admit, you know, there's a lot of families who are using and abusing the system, and the government has allowed it to happen for a very long time. I think it's important that anyone who is receiving the benefit of public assistance and in housing assistance or food stamps or cash and medical assistance, that it's important that you use that opportunity to devise a plan and work that plan to make yourself self-sufficient, to teach your family and your children the importance of self-sufficiency so that you can move on and feel better about yourself, feel better and don't give up and move forward and provide a future for yourself and your family. So my answer is yes, there is a need for government assistance, but there is also a need for the government assistance to be in check and to put limits on it and to make sure that folks are really able to move towards self-sufficiency.
I'd like to take one more call before we wrap this up, and you answered my follow-up question, which is what can families do to keep that support from becoming a crutch? Mm-hmm. You were very clear about that. So let's wrap up with Olivia from Allison Park. Olivia, we're short on time, but welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate you taking my call. So I'm going to be short because I know you're out of time. But I would like to ask Tammy, what advice would she have for somebody like me? I'm a war survivor. I survived the genocide when I was 10 years old. And since then, I have pretty much lived my life as in if today was your last day, because I've seen a lot of people who had a lot of money. And when death came, they weren't able to do anything with their money. And I'm sure they would have enjoyed a vacation with their families before they died. So since then, it's been hard for me to save just because I wonder, should I go with my son and husband instead and enjoy that vacation for if I die tomorrow? So what advice would she have for somebody like me? I make good money. My husband makes good money. But I just give myself whatever I can while I still.
Well, we lost Olivia there, but that's a great perspective and a great point, and that seems to be that the something we all struggle with. How do you mitigate that?
I love that she called in, and I think it's extremely supportive of my theory that a lot of us are spending money based on emotions and root issues that have absolutely nothing to do with money. Olivia's issue seems to be that she is spending and basing her financial priorities based on the fears that the things that she saw in her childhood. You know, the fear of whether I live or die one more day. And because she hasn't dealt with those issues, she is still making her financial decisions based on her emotions surrounding that traumatic time in her life. So I would suggest that she really work on her feelings and her issues regarding her past so that she can move forward in her future. That would be my advice.
Tammy Thompson has been our guest. She's a community liaison and certified housing counselor for NeighborWorks Western Pennsylvania. You can find a link to information about her and the work she does at our website, wesa.fm. Tammy Thompson, thank you so much for being with us here on Essential Pittsburgh. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I just want to tell anyone who thinks that they can benefit from any of our services or counseling. We do foreclosure prevention counseling, home buyer education, credit and budget counseling. Please feel free to give us a call at 412-281-9773, and you can make an appointment to meet with a counselor one-on-one, or you can attend any of our group sessions. And thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Coming up, what's free in Pittsburgh? And our sports guy, Bob Dvorak, remembers Jackie Robinson and who was the first black Pirates player when Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA.